Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we're opening up the mailbag to talk about what player the Heat could add to take them to the top of the Eastern Conference.
Then we'll discuss how Eric Spoelstra could use Bam Adebayo this season and what Tyler Johnson can do to justify his contract. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat in the NBA for FanSided. You could find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me in my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
This is part two of our weekly mailbag, part one posted on Monday. Quick note before we go on to the questions. We're trying something new to help the show. We're going to start taking our mailbag questions like these, but from our iTunes reviews. So to submit a question for our weekly mailbag, all you have to do is go to iTunes, leave a five-star review, and include the question in your review. Going forward, we'll grab our questions from there first. If this works, it'll help our show climb the iTunes charts and organize our mailbag questions on our end. This will be different from our recaps during the season, where we'll continue to answer questions and interact on Twitter and via email. So anyway, we've got a bunch of questions to get to, so let's start. This one comes from Henry, who asks, what player does the Heat need to get to the top half of the conference, a small forward or a power forward?
That's an interesting question, because
it's somewhat related to our first question from yesterday's mailbag.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think when you're looking at positionless basketball, I mean, you know, or positionally focused basketball, as Billy wrote in at that point in time, you know, I don't know that either position, I mean, you could make an argument for either. The right power forward could propel this team to the top of the Eastern Conference pretty easily. You know, say a LeBron James, I hear he's pretty good. He might be able to take us to another level as a power forward, or, you know, conversely, as a small forward as well. But I think if you look at this team and how it's currently constructed and who's starting at small forward and who's starting at power forward, I would probably say that a better small forward than the one who's currently starting for Miami, that is Josh Richardson, would probably be what it takes to get Miami to that another level. Like, I think that James Johnson, as a starting power forward, does enough at that position that he doesn't take away from Miami. I don't know that you can make that same argument for Josh Richardson.
And preferably, if you were able to get a more traditional small forward and a guy at that position, like an all-star level player there, you could possibly move Josh Richardson over to the two, where we've talked about how
he
might be better. And so I agree. I think a small forward is where it's at. I agree with you at power forward. I like what James Johnson brings to the table, especially when he's healthy. I think he gives you enough shooting there, or at least the threat of shooting there, where if you have floor spacers elsewhere, he's solid there. He sets really good screens. He doesn't stop moving. He's just a really good niche role player to have at that position. I like what he brings to the table. I like his versatility.
I'm trying to think what power forward. Like you can make that argument for LeBron, like I said. What other power forward takes this team to the next level as far as getting to the top half of the conference? Kristaps Porzingis, although you could say he's better suited for the five.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, unless you're talking about like a Draymond Green type.
Right.
Which, like, James Johnson is Draymond Green light.
Yeah.
It's what power forwards in the NBA right now are really getting teams to... The power forward for the Boston Celtics, arguably the best team in the East, is Marcus Morris, Markieff Morris, whichever one. you know, sometimes they'll play Al Horford at power forward, but he's mostly playing the five in crunch time. The Philadelphia 76ers were playing... Dario Saric, another kind of role player, niche kind of, not a big scorer. These are the kind of power forwards that you need, and James Johnson is right there. I think James Johnson is right there with those guys. I like what he brings to the table at that four. I think Zach Lowe is calling guys like that, not necessarily a stretch four in the way like maybe a Luke Babbitt or a Kevin Love is, but an elastic four, I think he settled on at one point.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that terminology for James Johnson.
I don't want my comment to seem like I'm being critical of Josh Richardson. I think he does have quote-unquote faults. I think he needs to be more aggressive as a scorer. Right now, he's a fine fill-in at the role. But I think there are, you know, problems, not with his defense. His defense has been sensational. I'd love to see him be a much more aggressive scorer. And I think that's part of what's missing is if you're going to have a small forward, a wing player in today's game, he needs to be a little bit better as a scorer. And Richardson just isn't capable at this point. I know he's
undersized to play that spot. I mean, like you said, it's not an issue on Josh Richardson, but if you're looking at places to improve this team, that's the spot, right? You go get a real small forward, add some length and some size to the perimeter, and play Josh Richardson more at the two, where I think he'd be better off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what kind of shape he's going to come into camp. I'd love to see him at like maybe 15 pounds heavier, to be honest with you, because he just needs to put on some bulk. And I want him to be more aggressive with his shot. Like, I mean, we've talked about this in the past with him. It's been a level of confidence issue. He gets in his own head. He stops taking that shot if he misses the first couple. I think he kind of got over that hump last year, but his numbers were still a little bit down. We're never going to get that return to what we saw in his rookie season. That's just unrealistic. But I still need him to hover closer to 38-40% from three-point shooting and many more attempts per game. I think that's where he's going to be the kind of go-to scorer that we need him to be, so that this question becomes moot then.
What would this team look like if it had a Kawhi Leonard or a Gordon Hayward or something like that at the three, right? I mean, now you can just see how much more improved that this team would be. And again, kind of going back to our conversation from yesterday about positionless basketball and things like that, more so than finding a small forward or a power forward or a shooting guard or a point guard, whatever position, They need a guy who can create his own shot. I mean, Miami last year didn't have a single player who averaged more than 2 isolation points per game.
Wow.
And you look at a team like every good team in the NBA. I mean, the Warriors have got guys like Durant and Curry, the Thunder with Westbrook. I mean, you've got the Rockets obviously made isolation their offense between Chris Paul and James Harden. You need guys who can just do stuff on their own, and the Heat just don't have that person. James Johnson led the Heat in isolation points last year with 118 total. I think James Harden had 10 times that. That's not even an exaggeration. So,
an impossible standard to achieve there for Heat players. But still, I mean, I get your point 100%.
Right.
There's just nobody that's a go-to scorer like that to create their own shot. And that is definitely a problem for Miami.
And Josh Richardson did say he is working on his ball handling
and
doing stuff like that because he wants to be that isolation scorer. So if the Heat have pegged him as a guy who might be able to do that, the Heat obviously know that they need more isolation scoring from particularly that position, that extra perimeter spot. And so if Josh Richardson can do that, it's great. But at the end of the day, he's still only 6'6". And you want a little bit more length there. I think if you look at the best...
What's an ideal size for a small forward in today's
6'8"?
Is it really?
Yeah, I think
I don't know about that. I mean, I think you start looking at players at that size. Okay, what's cool? Klay Thompson, again, another typical player at that position. Iguodala, who starts at the 3? Or Durant? I mean, I don't even know. That lineup
Durant,
is just...
Yeah.
He's 7 feet tall, 7'1".
Right. I mean, look at a guy like Kawhi and Gordon Hayward. These guys are all 6'8". 6'7", 6'8". And Josh Richardson is like a small 6'6", because he's also slight. Same. Like, he's not a big guy.
Yeah.
So, whatever it is, they need more size there. I think they need a guy who's a little bit taller. Like, best case scenario for Miami is that they're able to eventually get to a place where they're able to move Josh Richardson to the 2, and all of a sudden he goes from undersized to oversized. You get a little bit more length there at the 3 with a guy who's like 6'7", 6'8", with a little bit more of a bigger body, and now all of a sudden you're able to switch everything and play really good defense and I just think that might be the best version of Miami down the road, but that's just not where they're at right now.
No, right.
And that goes back to what Henry's asking. What kind of player do they need? And I just think they need an extra perimeter player who can just do stuff with the ball in his hand.
Yeah. Look, I mean, and to Miami's credit, not to get too critical of them, they've built that roster. They have Richardson. They have Winslow, and the expectation was that he'd be capable of filling that role as he enters his fourth year. He hasn't been able to do that, so we'll see how he progresses this year. I have high hopes. I think he's poised for a breakout. I'm not sure how he'll get that opportunity, to be honest with you, because I'm not sure he's good enough to supplant Richardson or Johnson in the starting lineup. So it's going to be tough to see. But at least they have that personnel in place, and hopefully they'll just find a way to make it work.
So we've got a bunch of other questions, not only about Tyler Johnson, but some stuff about Bam Adebayo, and we'll talk about that after this break. Back with Locked On Heat, Mike asks, how do you guys think Spo should utilize Bam this year? And so, this is a two-part question, but we're going to answer this first part. And this really, I think, when it comes down to Bam Adebayo, David, mostly has to do with not really Bam Adebayo, but the guys in front of Bam Adebayo, yeah. right? Hassan Whiteside and Kelly Olynyk. It really depends on what you do. Like, are you able to play Kelly at the four at all? Are you able to maybe trade Hassan Whiteside by the trade deadline? But all of that, let's just ignore that because we've talked about that in circles. What should Bam Adebayo's role be when he is on the court this year? How should Spo utilize him?
Well, are we defining when he should play at all? Because at this point, I really do think that he's just not going to be able to break ahead of either Whiteside or Olynyk. And so that kind of defines what Adebayo can do because he's not going to get that kind of significant playing time. So he's going to be in there in certain situations when either Whiteside's hurt or in foul trouble, or when Olynyk's hurt or in foul trouble. And if that's the case, as the third string center on this team, there's just not a lot of a role for him to fill. I mean, look, I think Adebayo, it's hard not to love him. He's athletic, he's explosive, he's young. He's the kind of player with the kind of potential that fans on a team that is viewed by many as mediocre is so exciting that you can say, well, at least we've got Adebayo. And as the sharp contrast to Whiteside, who gives no effort whatsoever, or Olynyk, who seems to lack a certain type of athleticism, Adebayo is much more exciting to watch. He's explosive, he's athletic, etc. But he's also raw as hell. And there's a problem there in that he has no offense. The kind of things that you and I saw from him previous to the draft, he hasn't been able to show. I don't know that he's going to be able to get that opportunity. He's a great ball handler, so maybe that's a role for him to fill. But again, as a third string center, how effective can he be in that role?
I think that's maybe what Mike is getting at here is, you know, we saw point Bam during summer league, especially in Sacramento. And does he get to, even in garbage time, if that's where Adebayo ends up playing in his second season, mostly garbage time minutes, or mostly minutes where, you know, maybe Olynyk is injured or Whiteside's injured for a few games. Whiteside's going to miss a few games with injuries. He always does.
Is this kind of question, though, is he trying to put us on the spot to say that Bam should start over Whiteside or Olynyk?
I think he's saying Bam should start over Goran Dragic at point guard, I think is what he's trying to get us to say. But all of that stuff, like Bam with the ball handling, all that stuff, Bam Adebayo, there might be a tendency to say, look at what Justice Winslow and James Johnson are able to do from the point forward position, and say that maybe Bam should be doing that, just like he was doing in Summer League. I actually think he should be doing more of like what Kelly Olynyk is doing. You know, put the ball in his hands at the elbow, let him run some of those, you know, dribble handoffs and things like that. If he has to put the ball on the ground, he can, but that's only in extreme circumstances because I just don't want him doing what he did in Summer League at the NBA level.
Yeah, that's like a turnover
way too raw. Yeah, it's still way too raw, but it's cool that he can do that. And I like that Miami is experimenting and developing that part of his game. He's comfortable with the ball in his hands. Let's not get so specific like, oh, he should be running pick and roll or, you know, do a dribble. He's comfortable with the ball in his hands. He's comfortable making decisions with the ball in his hands. And that's something he is better at than Whiteside is. And he has similar with Kelly Olynyk. So I think you play him in that role. What I don't want to see with Bam is him playing any power forward whatsoever. And there's already been talk about him playing power forward from the coaching staff, from the Heat, and from Bam saying he's comfortable playing the four because, quote-unquote, it's just basketball. No, it's not just basketball. It's a different position. And it's not just basketball because you have to play with other guys. And that Bam-Whiteside combo was a disaster last year. I don't want to see that ever again in my life. And so I hope that Spo does not use Bam at the four. That said, it might be the only way to get him some playing time. So I don't know. All of this kind of, if you can get Bam any playing time whatsoever, I think it's similar to last year. A rim-rolling guy who handles the ball a little bit from the elbow and helps facilitate the offense, and he sets good screens, and that's basically what he does.
Can we agree, then, that Bam should and will be the third-string center on this team?
Unless there's a trade, yeah. He should be the third-string center on this team because he is raw and young. But I'll say this. I think that he has shown me enough, at least, that I think Miami should be actively trying. After Whiteside gets healthy and you might be able to move him, they should be actively trying to find a way to get Bam more playing time at center. He has shown me enough, and I'm ready to see what that looks like. I'm ready to see him develop. And he might not need that right away. I'm not saying trade Whiteside right now for a bag of peanuts, but what I'm saying is they should be thinking about that now because there's only so much. He still can develop as a third-string center, but you can only develop so much at that position. So they should have a long-term plan in place there, and they might.
I don't know that they do. I don't know that they do. And I think this is the kind of answer that, I mean, honestly, Mike and probably most of our listeners aren't looking for. A lot of people, from what we've seen, love Adebayo, love that potential, and think he should be the starting center. That's just not realistic, folks. I mean, he's not good enough at this point. Look, we love that effort. We love what he can do. Hopefully he continues to round out his game, but he's just not going to be the starter next year, nor should he, when you're paying Whiteside as much as you are, when you've got Olynyk there who provides more of what Adebayo does.
Miami has, they want to make a playoff run. This team wants to compete. This team wants to win now, and we could debate that, but that's a whole other topic, right? Like, we could debate whether or not this team should start blowing this thing up and giving guys like Winslow and Bam and all these guys starting positions, but that's a whole other debate. Yeah. Let's get to part two of Mike's question, though.
Okay.
What stats slash role would Tyler Johnson have to produce slash play to justify his contract? And David, I think this is nothing short other than sixth man of the year candidate, right? I mean, when you're getting paid $19 million a year, you've got to be a sixth man of the year candidate. You've got to put up Lou Williams numbers. You've got to put up Eric Gordon numbers.
No. Yeah, I mean, that's unrealistic too, though. I mean, like Tyler just doesn't have that kind of scoring in bunches approach to his game. I'm comfortable, let's say, to put numbers on it, I would be comfortable with Tyler being a 17-point-per-game scorer with 5 assists per game in roughly 30 minutes of play with, you know, tossing a couple of rebounds here and there.
But those are Eric Gordon numbers.
Yeah, maybe you're right. And Eric Gordon's part of the most prolific offense in the NBA, you know, as part of the Houston Rockets. So it's tough to really, you know, expect Tyler to reach those numbers. Sixth man of the year is something we've talked about, at least in the conversation, just because I don't think there's that kind of excitement about his name league-wide to generate that kind of interest and seeing him as a sixth man. I mean, even a couple of years ago, before the contract, obviously, there was enough buzz about Tyler Johnson where he was a high-energy guy, a guy who could provide a lot of offense, or at least enough offense where he was, you know, a good find for Miami. Now, that contract is going to forever change how he's viewed.
Yep.
And so it's going to be tough for him to justify that contract. Let's get that out of the equation, Mike. And I appreciate you writing the question, and I know that a lot of Heat fans feel the same way. But at the same time, look, that contract was a mistake. It will always be the mistake. Unfortunately, it's probably one that's going to define Tyler Johnson's career. But at the same time, he's getting paid that money regardless whether it's by Miami or somebody else. So we have to focus on him just making the most of his opportunity. That's something he didn't do. Now, that we can be critical of Tyler last year. He didn't make the most of whatever playing time he did.
He did not.
He was not aggressive enough on offense. He was relegated more to a spot-up shooter, and he wasn't knocking it down at the level that he should have. I need him to mix it up a little bit more, to be more aggressive driving to the hoop, because he does have uncanny athleticism that I think throws a lot of people off. They don't expect this little guy who's, you know, generously listed at 6'4", to burst right past him and to rise up for a dunk where he can challange most centers in today's game.
And going back to the bench will help him do that. But unfortunately, you're paying a guy $19 million who should be coming off the bench. Now, if that's what he's best, if he is a sixth man of the year type candidate, or maybe there's a name recognition thing and there's, you know, the storyline around him prevents him from, but if he's putting up numbers of a sixth man of the year, I don't care if he wins sixth man of the year. I want him to put those numbers up, though. And that's exactly what you're talking about. 16 to 18 points a game, 2 or 3 assists a game. And if he continues to shoot well from three-point range, if he's five or more three-point shots a game at 36%, that's worth the $19 million. It is. And are we talking about $19 million? Or are we talking about now, do you average out, remember? Because this contract is backloaded.
Right.
Are we looking at him at, if he...
A good value of $12 million per.
$12 million a year, because that's the average, exactly. So if he's somewhere around there, I don't. If it's $12 million a year, if you're looking at it that way, or if you're just looking at it at what he's getting paid this season at $19 million a year, if he's giving you 16 to 18 points a game, he's going to be really, really valuable to this team.
Now let's consider off the bench. Let's consider the other thing, though. I mean, we're talking about Eric Gordon, who's definitely a starter, borderline all-star for most of his career, and despite some injuries here and there, or Lou Williams, who was playing on a middling team in LA. You know, is Miami's second unit going to just turn the ball over to Tyler and let him work? No. I mean, Dwayne Wade, expected to re-sign there, is probably going to command the ball. Wayne Ellington does what he does. I just don't see that Tyler Johnson's going to get that opportunity.
I don't think he's going to get a whole lot of playing time, to be honest. And he hasn't earned it at this point. And not over guys like Dwayne Wade or even a guy like Wayne Ellington at this point. So, speaking of Dwayne Wade, if Dwayne Wade returns, what does that mean for Miami's guard rotation? We'll talk about that when we come back after this break. Our Patreon supporter, Claudia, asks, assuming Dwayne Wade comes back, which guards do you think will play and which ones ride the bench? So this kind of relates to what we were just talking about with Tyler Johnson. It segues in pretty well. So if Dwayne Wade is part of the equation, right now Miami has Goran Dragic, Waiters, who is back healthy and will need to play, Wade, Ellington, Tyler Johnson. That's basically the group, and you wonder if this team tries to play Josh Richardson at all at the two. Probably not. Ronnie Magruder is there. Derek Jones Jr., who they liked what they saw out of him in Summer League. But that's really the core of it. Dragic, Waiters, Wade, Ellington, Tyler Johnson. How do you see that rotation shaking out? We both think that Dragic and Waiters will be the starters.
Yep. That means Wade probably is going to have very little playing time, which is why I always assumed that he wasn't going to return to Miami. Now we're seeing that it's more likely that he will. But I just didn't think he was going to be the kind of guy who was willing to play no more than 10 to 15 minutes per game. And even that might be too much. Like, I mean, he might be more effective than Tyler Johnson, which isn't saying much either. But Ellington needs to get his shots. You've got the ball. You've only got one ball, and you've got to make sure that all these guys get some playing time. Look, Ellington has to play because he provides something that nobody else on this team does. Tyler Johnson has some capability there to be a playmaker for others, and he's more athletic and younger than these other guys. So he's getting paid a whole heck of a lot of money, so he needs to get some playing time. So, I mean, it's very difficult to project how this lineup is. One of those pieces has to be moved, and I hate even considering that, but that is the reality, and nobody's going to want to take Tyler's contract. Goran's too old. Deion Waiters is too unproven, so you're kind of stuck with this roster where you're cutting into everybody's role and not allowing them the opportunity to flourish here because you've got this logjam in the backcourt.
You know, if Winslow is your starting, is your backup four, right, behind James Johnson, right? Those are your two power forwards, basically. I wonder if Wayne Ellington just ends up backing up Josh Richardson and now instead of trying... I really do, I view this Heat team as a three-guard basketball team. We've been talking a lot about Josh Richardson playing the two or playing the three and just sort of going, you know, judging this team by traditional positions. I think you need to look at what this Heat roster is more as a three-guard basketball team, not unlike what a lot of these college teams are running right now. And if that's the case, now you have to play guys like... You can add Josh Richardson into this, and that's six guys that you're trying to... that you're playing at three different positions, right? If you have three guards out there instead of two, well, now this becomes much more manageable. And I think that's what the Heat are going to view this as. I think this is how Spoelstra is going to view this thing. Not because he wants to play a three-guard unit, but because that's the way that this roster is currently set up. And so if you think about it that way, it's actually pretty clean. You've got Dragic and Tyler Johnson as your quote-unquote point guards. You've got Waiters and Wade as your quote-unquote shooting guards. And you've got Richardson and Ellington as your quote-unquote small forwards or your third guard in the offense. And now all of a sudden that breaks out pretty evenly. So again, there is a backlog here. There is a lot of depth at the guard spot, but I think you can play them all if you play them that way. I don't think Magruder and Derek Jones Jr. are going to need a lot of playing time. Those guys are going to be at the end of the bench playing because of injury or garbage time, spot minutes here and there. But that's it. I think that's it. Again, Dragic and Tyler Johnson play the same position. Waiters and Wade play the same position. Richardson and Ellington play the same position. And I think that's how Spo is going to have to look at it. And then you're rotating in the front court: James Johnson, Winslow, Hassan Whiteside, and Kelly Olynyk. And you know, and maybe you try to work Bam in here for a few minutes here and there. That's basically it. I don't think it's as bad as people are saying. Now that said, if the Heat really want to, I think the best version of Miami has a little bit more size and a little bit more length on the perimeter, and you start maybe trying to package some of these guys for more talent. But for now, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, and it sucks that you're going to cut into Rodney Magruder's playing time. Like, I think that there's still a role for him to play in this team. It seems very unlikely that he'll get that chance because of the logjam there. I mean, he only got that opportunity two seasons ago because of the number of injuries, and they were trying to rebuild in the absence of Dwayne Wade. And you know, it wasn't the ideal opportunity for him, but he made the most of it. And unfortunately, he just doesn't seem like he's going to be able to carve out much playing time. And then that also stunts the possibility of Justice Winslow backup point guard, which is something that you and I were both hoping we'd see more of in the future. It seems that it'll be actually less likely to actually develop.
Yeah, because of if everybody's healthy, there's less time for him to handle the ball. That said, if it's Winslow, Tyler Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Dwayne Wade, and a forward, or like Bam Adebayo or Kelly Olynyk, I could see Winslow playing some point forward, some stuff there. But the other way is maybe you instead of Justice Winslow playing, you know, point guard, just straight point guard, maybe you use him a little bit more and, you know, pick and roll stuff, and you let him handle, you know, on the roll, and you're able to get the ball in his hands one way or the other. So.
Yeah, I was just thinking of like a pseudo big three lineup with Tyler Johnson playing Mario Chalmers' role, Dwayne Wade, even at this point in his career, kind of cutting along the baseline with Winslow and LeBron James' type ball handling role.
I mean, that works. Nice.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, you can find room for that. Yeah, I don't think that it's as bad as people are saying. Again, if you kind of ditch the idea of that traditional two-guard lineup and really look at the Heat as a three-guard unit, which they just are. It makes a lot more sense. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And of course, for next week, start submitting those mailbag questions on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. Leave your question in the review. It would be really appreciated. You can support the show further by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.